step inside the tribe as our market experts share their boots-on-the-ground experience from the front lines of freight tech's emergence. I'm Tim Dooner, and this is Freight Wave Insiders.
Welcome back to the show. Freight Waves Insiders is where we go inside the career journeys and brand stories of our guests. And today, taking a trip over to New York. It's hot out there. Joining me, Shavsy Levy, from the CEO and founder of Shiffle. How's it going over there? Are you beating the heat? I'm hearing they're telling like everyone in New York City to turn off their air conditioning, their video game systems, charge their phones. It sounds rough. Are you doing fine?
So I actually got lucky. I just came back from a trip overseas where it was cooler than here in one of the Caribbean islands. So it was interesting being in the island and knowing that it's hotter in New York.
Now tell me, traveling over to the Caribbean right now, in the U.S., are guards getting down a little bit? We're coming out of the pandemic. People are getting wanderlust. They want to travel. What was the vibe like over in the Caribbean right now?
It is definitely, I'm seeing the world go back to normal. It's still a little bit hard. I had to delay my flight because there was some sort of technical issue, with getting certain, authorizations getting to the island. But in general, I do see the world resuming to normal. So hopefully sooner than later, but travel's busy. The airport was busy. So interesting.
No, it is. And, you know, it's been so busy, they've had to cancel a bunch of flights. So really weird. And that's going to tie into the freight market. Of course, air freight, ton of belly cargo goes in passenger planes. Every mode of transportation is kind of a dumpster fire right now. So we'll get into that. But before we do, we're going to go through your career. But give me a little elevator pitch on what Shiffle is, just for the audience who may not be initiated.
Shiffle, in the shortest terms, is a futuristic digital platform. And what we do every day is we envision how we see the industry being. We believe the industry is being disrupted and there's a lot of change coming to the industry, especially now what's going on. We're ripe for a overhaul, and that's what we do at Shiffle from the ground up. We're basically reinventing the way we see international freight, the movement of international freight, the automation, the visibility, and as a result, more efficiency and reduced costs for the customer.
Well, maybe I can't wait to crack into that coconut, but you know, you said a couple of interesting things there that got me kind of excited. You got this futuristic platform. You're just building it. So you just got back from the Caribbean. What does it mean to be the CEO today at Shiffle as you sit here in the summer of 2021?
So today it's actually a very tough time for our industry. There's a lot going on, and it's definitely not what we envisioned happening in our industry. And that's always a ripple effect of COVID. But it's very, very tough. And a lot of things are actually, it's very interesting to me, like the way things got turned around where we got customers reaching out to us and reaching out to us for assistance. And we, at a certain point, have to say, you know, we're not able to take on too many new customers and rather put a priority to existing customers. So this is very interesting, especially in an industry where we're kind of anticipating growing in 2021, where we're taking on customers, but we're at a point where we're like, you know, we have to put a stop to it and make sure we service the existing customers, give them the space and service throughout this difficult times. And we're very confident about the services we do right now within what's going on within the wireframes of the industry. And I feel like our offices overseas are definitely doing a great job at getting space onto the existing vessels. It's just a tough time, and that's what we're dealing with.
Well, what a wild world, too. There was a story a couple of weeks ago, and FedEx has walked it back, but FedEx Freight was like, we have to cut 1,500 LTL customers just to service our core. That's how congested and tough this market is. And I've sold freight. Freight, very cyclical. Market goes up and down. And I was selling at a time when, like, any freight that would come your way, it's very, you know, it's going to be so non-intuitive to say to a customer, a potential customer, I'm sorry, we don't have room for you on the platform right now. How does that feel, telling someone that? It's good, but it's bad, right? It's good you got a lot of business, but bad, you got to be like, sorry, club's full.
Right. We try to take a little bit of a different approach. So we'll jump on a phone call with the potential customer. We'll discuss their challenges. And we'll see what's going on, what their objectives are. If we can help them out, if we can get them some space, especially for urgent containers, we'll try and help them out. It's not always possible to get them the rates with the better rates, the service on the better rates. You know, there's multi-tier, especially now with what's going on. But sometimes if they can spend a little bit more, we can try and go out there in the market and find space for them. So we try to service them, especially if something is urgent, but we're letting them know, hey, if you can get space on your existing relationships, try to do that as much as possible. We'll help you out. And as things get better, you know, we'll be here to help you out.
Wow. Well, so Shabzi, I want to get some insight into how you see the world. And the way we do it on this show is we go back in time. So think back. You're 16 years old. You're young Shabzi. You're thinking about what you want to do with your life when you grow up. Where are you at? Where's your head at? Were you thinking of going to college? Was freight even in the picture? I know for me and most of my guests, unless they were multi-generational, it sure as heck wasn't.
Oh, absolutely not. Then, you know, how we always see those containers in the street, we don't know what's behind them, how much of an industry is behind the container movement. Now, a lot of people are getting to know our industry and seeing how important it is to the economy. But until now, we just saw trucks moving containers and we didn't put too much thought into it. Actually, I was pretty into music. I keyboard, guitar. That was what I was into. Never have I thought that I'm going to be going into this industry. After I got married, I actually found a job in the industry. So lucky me, fell right into the industry. And here we are 12 years later. I worked for a different company. I was always also very, very much into technology. I was always the pro when it came to Palm Pilots or Blackberries and all that. So I was always into technology. So as soon as I got to know the industry, and I'm the type of person that's always going to ask why and how, you know, what's going on? Not just taking it as a given, this is how we do things. I'm always going to try to understand, why is it being done that way? And is there a better way to do it? And as I progressed into my career at the company, and within this industry, there were so many questions, especially as other industries are progressing and becoming much more sophisticated in today's cloud age. Our industry is so backdated. And there's a lot of things that are mind-boggling that is still done that way. So as time progressed, I came to the realization that to do this, it's not just putting a bunch of bandages and patches. This really needs to be overhauled and reinvented from the ground up. And that's when I started Shiffle a few years ago. And we basically took an entire stab at it from fresh. And we built software from the ground up. That's what we do every day at Shiffle. And we have now offices all over the world. And we're basically, we know that our employees know that our job is to see how can we think this industry will be, how can we see the future of this industry, and how can we be ahead of the game.
All right, let's rewind the tape a little bit here, though. So you're right out of school, you get your first job in freight. And I believe you spent like a decade with Always, or almost a decade with Always over in, I believe it's Elizabethtown, New Jersey,
but
over by the port, right?
Yep.
What did you learn? Because I know when I joined this industry, it was in 2005, I joined FedEx Trade Networks, and I had come from the music industry, and, you know, I was used to maybe more modern and technology and those things, and I joined this industry, and it's still fax machines, and we're hand scanning everything, and we'd only just started hand scanning thing, I think a couple of years after I'd already been there. It drove me nuts as someone who grew up on computers. I mean, I've been hooked since I played Treasure Hunt on an Apple IIe in the computer lab when I was in kindergarten, making the turtle make a line, you know, with my early forays into programming. So it drove me nuts. And I could, you know, it was easy, I think, for me to see the opportunity, but I just didn't have the instincts or the know-how. What did you learn during those formative moments when you were at Always?
So yeah, I got to know the industry really well. The ins and outs of the industry. And also, like you said, I realized that at any given point in time, what we do is extremely backdated. And with today's technology, how different industries work, there's so many different things that can be done to progress this industry, especially with the companies being stuck with ancient software. You know, there's a few key companies that will provide software, and everybody's just stuck with those softwares. And when you use an outdated software, you're kind of stuck with the outdated ways. And you can keep on doing new integrations, new patches, but the ground is the source is not healthy. It's not a healthy structure. So this industry, and we're still seeing a lot of companies be stuck with those software. It was interesting to me. We had a integration done with the company called Terminal 49. And the entire integration to our custom platform was literally a 3-week process. We were able to integrate, get our software up and running with their live data. What they do is they give us live data and container movement releases at the terminal, everything. And this is how we can do it. We'll talk a lot about that later. And when we did that integration, a friend of mine reached out to me and he was like, how are you able to do this so quickly? We've been trying to do this for a year and we weren't able to do this. And you just came in here and did this from beginning to the end in 3 weeks. And I was like, what software do you use? And they're using a existing product of the industry. And I was like, yes, of course you're not going to be able to integrate. To start off, that software probably doesn't have API capability. So you're trying to do EDI. And with EDI, you're not going to have need a lot of more pieces to the to puzzle to get this integrated. So it's interesting to me that I feel like a lot of the existing software the companies use is what's actually holding back the progress of the industry.
What was that aha moment that always that really made you realize that Shiffle or whatever the idea was in your head is something that you could bring to life and perhaps you could do better than a process that's already happening?
Sure. So I guess it wasn't this aha moment suddenly. As I progressed into the industry, I started to realize more and more how backdated is and how many things can be over every single step of the way. I found, like, what if we have a software for this? What if this would have been integrated or automated? Why are we doing everything manually? Why are we double checking? And a lot of the problems, a lot of the phone calls that we get from customers, all as a result of either a lack of visibility or something happening at a lack of the efficiency in the industry. Fixing this, it wasn't just patches. It wasn't just something that we can put a bandage on, put another bandage on. And I found that to do this, a lot of the things have to be done from the core up, from the startup. So that's when I took the leap of faith and I started the company. And this is where we are today, 3 years later.
Pretty big leap of faith too. If I understand it, you put your house up to get this company off the ground. I imagine if my wife right now, we just got a house here in Chattanooga. If I go, hey, I'm going to put the house on the line and start this business, that's going to be a tough conversation to have with her. How did that go? And what gave you the confidence to realize you could get this and you could execute it? And you know what? This is the thing.
Yeah, it was pretty tough. I mean, I very strongly believed in what I wanted to do and kind of not too much thought went into, are we doing that or not? We were like, we're doing this. We're going to make this happen. And that's where we went
all
in.
Is that usually your personality? Is that you? You're like,
not always, okay. Not always. But in this case, I was like, I went all in and we said, this has no option to go south. We're going to make this happen and this is going to work.
So there's a lot of people sitting at brokerages right now too. And like it's like they're calling right now the great resignation. A lot of people, I think, had a massive effect. I think the pandemic had a massive effect on people's psyches, right? And I think being locked up for a year, people need to get out. And some of that just manifests in like, I just got to go to a different company to do something different and to shed that skin like a rattlesnake of COVID, of that COVID year hanging over us. Challenging time, right? For those people, they might want to jump out and do a company. So, you put the house, you get the credit, you get the money. So how does it go? How do you pick the name, first of all? Like, where did Shiffle come from?
So the name Shiffle, interestingly, means a boat in Yiddish. This is the language, first language for me. Very similar to German. So the kind of, I was looking out for a different word, not just forwarding or not a freight or anything related. I was looking out for a word that's going to stick and be unique. I was just... the place where you find names is GoDaddy. You want to go there and make sure that no one else has the domain. And like, one day I just put it in. I was like, wait, this is going to work. And just bought it. And then we're like, take some time to sink in. And that's what we went with.
I love it. I asked, we just had a virtual event. I asked Patrick Berglund from Zenetta how he picked the name Zenetta. And he's like, there was the domain was available.
Exactly. Like,
pretty much that.
That's exactly it.
So you got the company now. You got to pour the foundation. The company is tech-based, future tech. So how do you start developing the algorithms and tech that are going to drive this thing?
All right. So first, start to get this company up and running. We need to see movement. We need to get the operation up, right? We're not coming from a tech first. We're coming from a first getting the operation up and running and getting our business where it needs to be. So a lot of the focus in the beginning was getting a basic forwarding company up. We have to have the basics in. I started my office in China right at the beginning, and we started moving freight. I mean, I've been in the industry a long time. I know a lot of people. So it was pretty easy for me to get a few customers to sign up and just starting to move freight. And from there on, I basically started developing, which is putting together a team of developers. And that's a lot what I love to do. And this is where a lot of my resources go in a day-to-day. And this is where we started developing the software. And, you know, while we continue with this old way of doing things, we were kind of bringing in the software, rolling it in, and then transitioning into the new software and starting to do things differently. So it was pretty much standard in the beginning, where at a certain point, we're like, all right, let's do this. Let's jump on the software and let's start moving. Let's start doing it our way.
So what was your initial offering when you went out to customers and you try to get those early onboarders, make sure the platform's working, tell them go around and you know, break it and all those kind of things? How do you lure those customers in?
So essentially, to begin with, we were like any other forwarder. We were offering, you know, rates were back then when I started $1,200 to LA or even less.
Oh my God.
There wasn't a lot of meat on the bone over there. Oh, good old times.
But you know what? But here's the funny thing. I was selling freight in 2015, right? And I remember it was like Shanghai to the West Coast was like $1,200. And shippers would still argue. It's, mind you, it's like 15,000 now, and they'll argue as well. But they were arguing when it was 1,200.
Yes, exactly. And we were fighting over $20 off $20 now. So good. It was, I think the lowest point I ever saw was like 800 to LA. And New York, what is it, about 2,200, 2,400 that we're typically is out of China. So getting customers was pretty much, it was about rate. What are the things I did pretty quickly, and we're still very unique about that. And this was an interesting way that helped me grow the company a lot without outside funding, was we are the only ones offering free credit card payments for freight. So we're essentially taking a hit on the credit card processing fee. And what we're gaining with that is a lot. So first of all, companies love points. People love to travel. Before COVID, this was still before COVID, people were traveling a lot. And there's a lot of credit cards that give you 2%, 3% cash back or points on freight. So this is just the first benefit. I'm going to be using Shiffle and I'll get this little bonus on the side. So this is something we did right away. And the benefits we had right at the beginning is we were able to reduce risk, because when we do credit cards, we're getting paid right away. We have the float immediately to gain other business. And we're able to attract customers that like the fact that they're getting free credit card, and the customer gets the float on the credit card. If it's utilized properly, they're getting 30 to 45 days on average. So that was an interesting idea that I came up with. Wasn't easy. I feel the way I was able to do it and take that hit is because of the way we're structured and how efficient we're set up. And this is something, guys, we still have till today. They now a container costs $12,000-$15,000. So it can be pretty high, the fees for the processing, but we're sticking with it. We're going with it. And this is helping a lot of our growth as well.
I love the points thing because it makes things sticky, right? You can scale your relationship as the consumer, as the buyer side, and it incentivizes you to come back and buy more because you're building, you're stacking up. I love it. You're making little Legos. It's good stuff. But tell me, so what's the user experience? I go onto the site and I jump in. What am I doing? Who's your customer?
Right. So our customers essentially anywhere are companies that import, mostly imports. We do exports as well, but imports is big for us. And Asia is huge for us. We have a large office out of China, and we will handle companies any size, anywhere between, you know, the smaller customers of 20, 30 containers a year to larger volumes. We have customers that bring in 4,000 or 5,000 containers a year. So companies of any size will be benefiting from what we do. Obviously, as the company gets larger, there's a lot of different details and how we're structuring that relationship with the customer. Like larger customers will have their own contracts. So we're using the Shiffle platform to manage their own contracts so they can benefit everything, because it doesn't always make sense for companies to use an MVO contract. So we're kind of building it not around our profits, but around what makes most sense for the customer. So the pretty much what we're doing is essentially taking the entire process and rolling it into a platform. So they're having visibility from beginning to the end of everything going on from the process. So from the start, when they're going to get a booking, we're traditionally getting an email, manual emails, a lot of back and forth. They can go into the platform, they can see the booking, the ready date, and they can now choose the option from within the platform, approve it. So a company is going to have 10, 20 bookings a day. Instead of having 20 emails coming in daily, they're going to the platform. They're looking exactly at all the pending bookings. And they can make a decision what they want to hold, what they want to ship. And that's all in there, either on their contracts, our contracts. You know, some companies will offer the spot markets and the direct contracts that they have, and they can make a decision based on the urgency or space. Right now, not a lot of companies are able to move on the direct contracts on the BCOs. A lot of products are moving on the spot rates. But, you know, in normal times, we would be utilizing the company's direct contracts as well most of the time for larger companies.
You know, there's an old joke in the freight tech scene that Domino's Pizza Tracker provides better visibility and tracking than most freight companies do. I know that's changing quite a bit, and you mentioned that, the visibility thing. So what kind of touch points are you including on this? So I booked some freight with you. I got something coming in. What am I seeing along the way? What's my journey?
So it was always interesting to me that you can be sitting on your couch and knowing exactly where your $8 sandwich is up to, like you said, but $100,000 worth of products and you have no idea what's going on. So that was a very big focus from the beginning. And we actually were able to do a lot with the Terminal 49 integration. But essentially at this point in our platform, you're able to see exactly every single point of the process and what's going on. So from a start, this is just going to be a booking that is pending. So you'll be able to go in there and see all the booking information. Now we're working on the consolidations, maybe fill up another 10 or 15 CBM in there. And then we'll get the booking approved. You'll be able to go through the platform and see when the SO is released at the factory. And now you're able to start seeing the container movement. So you'll be able to see if the empty container was gated out, and the full container was gated back into the terminal in time, not in time. You know, sometimes a day right now, if you have a GRI July 1st for $2,000, an hour difference in gating in the container is going to be $2,000. So, you know, we try to get the factories to gate them in as early as possible. You'll be able to see, and this became so important now with all these delays going on, even before the vessel departs, there's a lot of delays happening now. So you're able to see, you're able to get insight into the ETDs and ETAs as they happen. So the second the carrier updates the ETA, you'll be getting an alert from our system. You'll see it on the platform. And then throughout the journey, you're just able to monitor the container within the transship port and from there on. A good thing we were able to do, and it was interesting to me, it was just a cool feature until it became really handy now, which is live container visibility. So you're able to click in our platform and see exactly where on the ocean the container is located. Until now, it would have been just a cool feature. But what I realized with all the congestion in LA is we were getting a lot of phone calls from companies. Hey, my ETA was 1 week ago, I still don't have the product. What's going on? And we were like going in and checking exactly where the container is located. Once we were able to implement the system, we're just telling customers, hey, just click on that button. You'll see exactly where the vessel is. And most of the time, it's sitting right next to the port waiting to get a dock. So they're able to monitor exactly what's going on, when it's getting to the dock. When they see the vessel moving over to the dock, they know they're going to be having the goods within a few days.
I was going to say, we got these visibility tools now, but because of the way the freight market is and the port congestion is, it's like, awesome, finally have visibility. Then you go and you look and it's like, oh, there's 20 container ships at anchor in the port of LA and it might not get unloaded for 2 weeks and it's going to wait to get pulled out. And then those rat finks over there are probably going to try and charge me demurrage. And then if it gets to the rail, it's going to sit there for 11 days. But it's such a, it's crazy right now. I'm so glad I'm not in operations or in your seat right now, because I've been in the good times and bad, but I've never worked in this industry in a time that is quite as unique as this, and one with a pendulum that has swung so hard from March, April, and June of last year, March, April, and May of last year, all the way to the power just shifting all so strongly to the carriers. If you remember last year, there were truckers who wanted to, you know, they wanted to put brokers on a pike, you know, and they were going to Washington and protesting. You know, they've been awfully quiet since because the money's coming in. Tough situation. You're growing a company during all of this time. You start in 2019, I believe. You get stress tested in 2020. You're getting stress tested this year. But along the way, you've opened offices in the USA, China, India, Vietnam, the Philippines, Bangladesh, Georgia, and you're still growing. So tell me something. How challenging is it to build a team here and also build a team abroad at the same time while live ammo is flying at you?
So what I find is what we are an international function. What we do is we facilitate the movement of cargo all over the world. So essentially having boots on the ground is key. And actually, this is a tremendous help. And our customers, I hear so many good things from our customers about the direct access with our offices. So essentially, when we have a booking coming from China, let's say, our customers are going to be communicating directly with our office over there. So we're cutting out all the middle parties in between, and they're communicating directly. So as information comes in, as things are happening, they know about it. So let's say the customer is 10 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night. There's an email coming in. Factory doesn't want to ship yet. They're waiting for a payment or whatever is going on. Or there's no 40 high cube equipment. Can we put it on a 45? So all that information is now flowing directly to our customers so they can respond instantly. And in the other version, the other way this would have worked is the agent would have sent it to the local forwarder. The forwarder employee would have come into the office in the morning, started working on their urgent shipments, and then they would have gotten to the email 1 o'clock, sent it to the customer 2 o'clock. Customer would have left the office early that day, not replied till the next day. So, you know, those things take a day, two or three, and those are critical times to make decisions quickly. So by just taking out all the middle parties, connecting our offices to the customer here, we're able to, you know, improve efficiency tremendously. And as a result, we're able to move product a lot faster.
No, yeah, I believe it. And I'm impressed by this really quick build out. Now, initially, we started out talking about you bootstrapped the company. You got that credit line on your house. Is that still the case? Still bootstrapped? You going out for venture capital, private equity? How's the funding and the capital coming in?
So we're working with traditional banks now, and thankfully they love our financials, and they're able to give us generous lines of credits. So that's a huge help. So thankfully my house is back to paid off, and that's good. A little bit of peace of mind there. But yeah, so we have relationships now with many banks, and that's been a tremendous help to continue our growth. As well as I feel like we're growing a very healthy company with an international presence. So the earlier example of having offices overseas, we're now able to save on having employees here doing the bookings or having employees being involved. So I feel like our overhead is just much more efficient when it comes to the operational setup. And that's besides the benefits we're getting out of the software. So that puts us tremendously ahead, I feel, and sets us up for success into the future of the industry.
Mentioned it earlier, great resignation, building teams. You need people, you need talent, you need human capital. I read a quote from you where you said initially you thought the hardest part would be bringing customers, but actually the hardest part is bringing really valuable team members. And I work in a startup over at FreightWaves, and you know how much a bad hire can be, and how much a boost and advantage and a, you know, blast of nitrous oxide a great hire can be, right? You get psyched. You're like, where did this person come from? What's it been like from your experience, especially this year, as this market has just shifted so much?
So this is actually one of the most challenging things that I'm going through with growing the company. And I think the core of it is we're a very much experienced industry. There's a lot to know in our industry. You can't just take someone and throw them into the industry and all of a sudden he'll be able to make decisions and know exactly what's going on. There's so much in our industry that we take for granted because we know. But I find that when you take someone outside of the industry, it takes a long time to fall in and get to know the industry. So right now, hiring people in general is very difficult in the United States, and especially getting experienced people in the industry hired is even more so difficult because of what's going on. So getting people trained, getting people up to speed so they can actually start being of value to the company takes a long time. And for fast growing companies is a key challenge.
You know, I make content for those people. I consider What the Truck to be a gateway drug to freight, you know, so I would highly recommend they see this. But also, if you really want to get insight on how the founders and CEOs in this industry think and how they build companies and how they hire and how the inner workings go, FreightWaves Insider is a great landing spot. So definitely, if you're listening, turn your employees on to it, especially those new hires who are like, I don't know how this works. Because whenever I produce something, Shabzy, I think back to my first day at FedEx Trade Networks, coming from the music industry, having no idea what a broker was. I was just there to get a paycheck and health insurance. I was running out of money. I just moved back to Boston. You know, it's like a Roach Motel here. I got trapped in the industry. And I mean, I love it, but you know, it's a great thing. You know, I have a great quote from you here. It's actually pretty bold as well. It says, "The entire industry needs to be reimagined and overhauled." That's a Herculean undertaking, though. What is your piece in that reimagining? And that sometimes I hate using the word disruption, because in freight, disruption is usually not a great adjective, but doing that disruption to the processes within these freight forwarders and 3PLs in the industry in general, and the way that we interact with shippers, where do you fit into that equation?
So I'll give you an example I was thinking about earlier. When it comes to booking cargo and everything that's going on in the industry, I feel like a lot of the issues can be solved with technology, and I feel like the industry is going to be moving that way. So let's say when it comes to right now, the congestion, the fact is our industry is not at equilibrium. There's always either more supply, either more demand, right? We're not at a point where there's a healthy mix. We're not a consistent industry. There is times when there's a lot more supply and times with a lot more demand, and that drives pricing from $800 up to $50,000 where we're at right now. So what's happening right now is a lot of companies are producing cargo and, you know, issuing purchase orders. And it just comes to like, all right, the goods are ready now. And hey, they contact the forwarder, get my goods onto the boat. And carriers don't know. They don't have a forecast. They don't know what's going on. And all of a sudden, there's all this cargo coming their way without any planning, without anything. And everybody expects them to get the cargo on board. But it doesn't work like that. There's an extensive amount of planning that needs to go in. And I find the other interesting part in the industry is there's no, virtually no reason for a company to book early. You can book a cargo as early as possible. You get no benefits. You get hit by probably 10 GRIs along the process. So essentially booking cargo early has zero benefits. And you're still getting a lot of GRIs along the process, which is frankly not fair. You're counting on a certain price and you might end up having a drastically different price. So I find it shocking that we weren't able to adapt the same model as the travel industry. You're able to book a flight now 6 months, 8 months ahead of time, and you virtually have that price guaranteed no matter how busy and what's going to happen along the way. Now, the airline knows you're coming on the flight. They're able to plan accordingly, and they're able to adapt as necessary. I feel like in our industry, having a model like that where companies can book book space on the boats according to their production and actually have their production lined up according to how the season, how the industry is. So if they're bringing in a product that's not as critical, they can line up the production to a quieter time of the year. And that might interestingly solve a lot of the problems we're having in the industry now, where companies bringing in large products that are not seasonal intensive can bring them in at different times, gain out of booking them early, and carriers are not able to get visibility into cargo coming their way 2-3 months ahead. And same thing would happen with truckers here. And I feel like a lot of the industry is going to change towards more giving companies a benefit of booking cargo early. And I think adapting different type of pricing models is going to be a huge help in resolving the issues. So the way Shiffle comes into the picture is a freight forwarder essentially just moves a lot of documents back and forth. That's what we do. Now it's emails back and forth. We basically forward a lot of information back and forth. That's what we do. Better than moving containers sometimes, you know, we're essentially communicating a lot. So a lot of that can be, especially as the industry progresses, a lot of that can be transformed into software, and a lot of that can be automated and streamlined. And essentially, the way we see things moving, we see our industry becoming more and more sophisticated, more and more streamlined, and the Shiffle platform is built towards that. So we're automating a lot of the processes. We're integrated with customs. We're integrated, like our customs entry doing within the Shiffle platform is just a click of a button. It goes right over to the customs platform that we use. And we're getting integrated with purchase orders from our customers, where we're getting customers' purchase orders way in advance. So we now have that visibility of what's coming in. And we're automating a lot of the physical process of moving the containers. So I see as that's going to happen more and more, I feel like a lot of the traditional freight forwarders might have a problem competing with the newer companies that are coming more sophisticated and less overhead intensive products. And that's where I see the industry heading.
And I remember when GRIs and PSS, peak season surcharge, were kind of toothless. You'd get the notice from the lines like, in 2015. It's like, come on. I mean, there's a freight recession going on right now. So nobody had to pay those things. And now, you know, and those were like, they were like, we just want $400 more. And now they're like $2,000, $4,000 more. It's wild. Let's talk about that market now. There, and let's do it through an example. So I was on Reddit the other day on their logistics board, and there was a shipper on there, and he had a question. He goes, I have a shipment that is Shanghai to Long Beach that they need in October. They were offered a booking at the end of July for $15,000, and this isn't a frequent shipper, so they were pretty shocked by the price, and they're like, should I wait it out? Should I book it now? My advice, I know what my advice would be, but let's hear from you first. What would you do in this example? You've got a booking secured late July, you need in October, $15,000.
So essentially what I tell my customers, if you have to bring in the product, then just bring it in. We don't know what's going to end up happening. We don't know if the pricing is just going to go up a lot more. I do think we've reached a point where a lot of companies are dropping out and not a lot of and saying, let me hold out just because I cannot pay the kind of pricing. However, I tell my customers, your competitors are all paying the same. They're all in the same boat and everybody's struggling with the same pricing and operational issues. So I mean, if you can wait it out, if pricing is going to go up, so is everyone else's pricing, and you're going to be in the same boat. But if you need to ship it, you need to have the product here, I don't think waiting is going to do anything. An interesting observation, I feel like, and this is on a larger scale, but I feel like we're at a big, like, starting COVID came the mask shortages, the wipe shortages, and the hand sanitizers, thermometers, gowns. And I remember talking to people at that time when masks were costing 90 cents, 80 cents a piece, and a lot of people bring in mass quantity. What ended up happening is pricing dropped drastically. And people were telling me at that time, no, it's not possible. It can be that the supply will come in that quickly. The pricing is going to stay high. And all of a sudden, and suddenly we got to a point where it literally dropped and people were stuck with masks at 30 cents when the market was selling at 2 cents. And essentially the same thing happened with everything else. Gloves not so much yet, but gowns and thermometers and all these products ended up being, you know, the supply chain prevailed and the products went right where it needs to be. I feel like on the supply chain end, it's happening at a larger scale now, but we might end up in a situation where, you know, products are coming in and companies are calming down and they have enough product to satisfy. We don't know what's going to happen, but I think there's a big chance we might see a drastic drop suddenly.
Wow. See, my concern here is just, I look at it from the perspective of capacity, right? Yantian just got unwound, but it's going to take a while to get all those containers back in. Port of Long Beach, they got down to 10 containers about a week ago at anchor. It's slowly ticking back up. And then schedule delays right now. You're looking at, on average, 20-day schedule delay. So my concern, a couple of concerns, and this is my sales brain coming in, because someone called me with this question on a sales call, I'd be like, you obviously don't ship that often. You obviously don't have a lot of volume to leverage here. This is probably pretty critical if you don't bring that many containers in. And if you think about it, end of July, if there's 20-day delay in scheduling, plus the delays of the ports and everything, I mean, you're not really looking at that much of a pull forward before October. My concern, too, would be something you said there that was really interesting, that some people might be trying to wait this out for it to go down. But what if it doesn't? And that big bum rush is going to come in when people try to do their traditional pull forwards, but it's too late. That would be a little scary. But on your platform, for example, you look at a market like
just,
this.
Just one thing, Dura. We got to look at one thing. The port in California had, I think they broke a record. Was it the month of May that they broke a record? They handled the most cargo they ever handled in a month. So we have to look at the end result, which is at the end of the game with all the hiccups, we're moving a tremendous amount of cargo coming in. So I mean, no one knows what's really going to happen, but I feel like with all the hiccups, we're still shipping a hell of a lot of cargo.
So how challenging is it to get capacity on your platform and to offer that to your clients and keep a valuable infrastructure up for people to use? Has that been harder as the market gets more constrained or what?
Yeah, it's been very difficult. I mean, our teams overseas work full time, and every container where typically it would be simple getting customers multiple options for every container, we have to be lucky to get space on one, and a lot of work goes into securing the containers. And it's not always at a cheap price. I mean, we've made a conscious decision not to focus on price at this time. It's just not a time to negotiate. And thankfully, that's worked very well for us. If a customer reaches out to us and say, hey, we got $1,000 cheaper, $2,000 cheaper, we'll tell them, you know, we're here for the long term with you. We'll help help you in any way possible, but we're not here right now to move cargo at a cheap price. It just doesn't work. You might get lucky here and there to move cargo at cheap pricing, but taking that approach and just paying whatever is necessary to get the cargo moving has helped us a lot. And we're moving a lot of cargo. I mean, we don't have containers stuck in China. We don't have containers not moving, but it comes at a cost. And it's not a time to be negotiating with carriers. It's time to say, what do I need to pay you to get this cargo moving?
How are you building volume and leveraging it? Is it like a traditional 3PL? Like the ones I worked out, they would have overseas agents. They would promise them X amount of container commitments, minimum quantity commitments. And a lot of 3PLs do that that aren't huge because they're not the C.H. Robinsons of the world. They can't, you know, they just don't have enough volume. So they kind of form conglomerates around overseas agents. Is that something similar to the way that you operate, or are you having a different model?
Yeah, so we find that a healthy mix of everything is right now is key. So leveraging our direct contracts, leveraging our own relationships, and then leveraging the large co-loaders, as we call them in China, that have large carrier contracts, is the best way for us to ensure that all our cargo moves on time.
Beautiful. I like what I'm hearing. And is that, what is the customer response been to the platform, especially as it's matured into, I guess you're in year three now. So what's the feedback you've been hearing?
I mean, we work with our customers. We're getting great feedback from our customers, and we encourage our customers to if they have any suggestions, any recommendations, we encourage them to reach out to us, and we work with the customers to improve and bring more features to the model. We have great relationships with our customers. That's been working extremely well. We're getting a lot of great feedback from customers, and we have a lot of exciting stuff coming up.
Shevzy, maybe the earth is healing. I ordered a couch on April 22nd, right? And it just arrived on my doorstep. I'm pretty excited about that. Today is, I'm recording this on the 1st of July. So what is that, like 11 weeks? 12? Unheard of. Just crazy.
I'm lucky, dude. I'm still waiting for my couch.
Oh, how long are you after? I have a couch that's coming too. Another couch. It's going to be a while. But when's your quote? Mine's October.
So we keep on getting an email that it's still not ready. We ordered it about 3 months ago. Let's see what's going to happen. Luckily, our old couch is still pulling through, but...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So tell me,
I could
me
probably
so
help
me.
Them get some containers out if I would know who to contact to get my couch here earlier.
I know. Mine came in through Houston. I love looking at the tracking, because once you get into this business, you start becoming like a freight nerd. I'm like, interesting. They went Port Houston. They're coming up, and they went to the FedEx. And it's just neat. I get it. I'm sure most, if you listen to a show like this, you probably get into that kind of stuff too. It's no surprise to anybody. So let me ask you: market's crazy. We all know the market's crazy. So how has this market helped shape and refine Shiffle and what you're doing and how you're building the underlying architecture?
So there's always opportunity, especially at a time like now. Where we can actually try and identify where a lot of the hiccups are and focus a lot on getting those fixed and getting those corrected. I feel like the market is going to, it's going to, once it comes back to normalcy, and we might actually see an opposite effect. I see a lot of carriers are buying, stocking up with vessels, and similar to that happened in 2008. Last time we had this, not to this level, but right after that, we had a significant drop. But I find that in those times, there's opportunity to kind of think of how is the industry going to adapt when we're coming out of this. And it's not going to last forever. So as soon as we're coming out of this, we'll be ready with how we identify what challenges we identify we needed to look at and implement the technology accordingly to be able to adapt to the challenges we've seen.
So in 2018, we saw record truck orders. The ELD mandate had come in inland. It caused a big freight rate boom. It caused a shortage of drivers because everybody had tons of freight to move. They needed equipment seated, all that kind of thing. You start hearing carriers put out big bonuses. 2019 comes in, record number of bankruptcies. Right now, tons of carrier bonuses, labor hard to find, record number of trailer orders, record number of truck orders. Although there would probably be even more if there wasn't this microchip shortage that's going on that is stymieing that. It's actually stymieing a lot of sales right now. Like inventory levels are going up. People want to buy stuff. I don't know where this endless amount of money is coming from, but people keep wanting to buy garbage and crap and fill their house with things. I guess I'm a hypocrite because I'm on Amazon all the time. New things are showing up. But what do you think happens when the pendulum swings the other way?
So we have to learn that our industry is inconsistent. We have to recognize that cargo doesn't move consistently. There's busy seasons and not busy seasons. If we don't tackle that problem we're not going to be able to solve this problem in the bigger picture. I mean, there's a lot of new infrastructure coming, a lot of new vessels, and then what's going to end up happening is the opposite effect. We have to solve we have to tackle the problem at core, which is the inconsistencies and the fact that cargo is not moving consistently. And I believe a lot of that can be resolved by adapting with technology to a lot of the things I mentioned earlier, which is booking in advance, having visibility, giving benefits to companies to plan ahead so the carriers can plan ahead as well, and give benefits to companies booking off season.
What do you think the biggest risk to the supply chain is this year, the biggest risk to our industry?
As far as on the bigger scale, I mean, we see how important the supply chain is. And I think we can see how resilient it is, that even after so many problems, we're still moving a lot of product. There's still a lot of product coming in, and we should all recognize that. It could have been so much worse. But definitely countering that. And also what I find is a lot of the smaller companies are dealing with a lot of challenges because they don't have the same advantages that larger companies have. So what ends up happening is a lot of the smaller companies are getting hit much, much harder than the larger companies. But what I tell people all the time, they complain, you know, what's going on? Why is freight $15,000, $18,000? Why isn't the government getting involved, capping those rates? And I'm like, who do you think would have gotten those rates if it's capped at 5,000? Do you think you would have gotten a single container? I mean, we have to recognize that the fact that it's a supply and demand and pricing goes up this high gives an opportunity for everybody to get onto that boat.
So can your platform help those smaller shippers, those 30 container guys, maybe that one who hasn't put a container on the water in a couple of months and is just shocked at the pricing right now? Is your platform ideal for that? Is it better for bigger shippers? Is there a good in-between? Who's the ideal customer on your platform right now?
A lot of our customers are smaller customers that move anywhere between 50 to 200 to 300 containers, and we're helping them a lot. It's definitely very, very, it's built for larger companies to use as well. But a lot of our customers are larger, smaller companies that we cater to a full end-to-end service, moving it on our MVO contracts. We're trying to help outside companies that reach out to us. I get phone calls daily. Our team is getting phone calls daily for companies trying to get us to move some cargo. And we started a conversation touching that subject. And we're trying to help companies move products, especially if a company calls me up. They have 50, 60 containers sitting there. And they have orders and nothing is moving. We'll try to get some containers out for them. But we don't have an unlimited capacity. So it's unfortunately a challenging time. We have to shut down our automatic sign-up. We have to, you know, do a manual process for now because we're not able to just sign up unlimited amount of customers.
What's next for Shiffle? What are you don't have to give anything away if it's top secret, but what are you gearing up for the rest of the year and moving into 2022?
So automation is what we're focusing a lot on, and especially on the back end. If we can get to a point where a container moves from one point to another with zero human involvement, you know, that's huge. We've gotten significantly ahead with that, automating a lot of the process, and then we're kind of tackling more visibility for companies. We're offering an interesting product for smaller companies to be using our platform for purchase order and inventory. We're beta testing that with some customers. What we're trying to create is this ecosystem where companies can use Shiffle, and truckers can use the Shiffle platform, and shippers can use the Shiffle platform. We want to bring all the parties together on one platform where they can collaborate and move product efficiently. So that's our goal, and that's where we're heading for, and we feel this is how the industry can evolve, to have this all parties related to shipment communicate on this one platform and contribute. So we're offering a few interesting products for that. That's going to progress that goal.
Now, it's interesting you mentioned automation, because a lot of times I talk to a lot of truckers and they have this fear of autonomous trucks, and they're going to take all their jobs and it's going to be this sort of dystopian world. And I always say, like, hey, the real automation is happening within warehouses and at those brokers' desks. So when you see a ton of them get swept out to sea and a ton of those jobs go away, because those, in my opinion, are going away before the drivers are, because as you mentioned, there's so many inefficiencies. It's just the nature of the beast, and it's part of the game that needs to change, and customers are getting woke to it. Shippers are getting woke to it. People like you are in the background building out the networks to do those kind of things. Exciting stuff. We're almost at the end of our ride here, but I got to ask you something. First-time CEO, first-time founder, I believe. What have you learned so far along the way?
Yeah, so I mean, what I've learned a lot is we're a team of people with the same mission. And, you know, having this input from all the employees and getting this mission aligned for everybody to collaborate and to bring up their ideas and ultimately, you know, for everyone here knows their job is to not do anything. And we tell employees all the time, if you can figure out how to do what you do and automate that, that's what we want to do. That's where we want to go. And, you know, getting everyone's ideas in one place and encouraging collaboration between employees is key to advance the mission.
5 years from now, we see a much different supply chain than we see now. We operate in a much different environment, or because this phrase is still kind of slow.
I think it is going to be drastically different. I actually think it's going to be largely an entirely different infrastructure. I think there's so much that can be done that can automate a lot. Like, think of a company issues a purchase order. It automatically goes to the forwarder. I guess we can call it a forwarder, but it automatically goes to the platform. And the carrier is now aware when that cargo is coming in. The software is aware of the company's ship dates. And a lot of that can be now automated. No emails back and forth. It can be booked automatically. I think a lot of the innovation is going to depend on the carriers improving the support and offering more integrations and APIs, which is happening at a slower pace. But I think it's going to adapt, and it's going to adapt quickly and eliminate a lot of the back and forth, a lot of the inefficiencies. And as a result, it's going to be hard for companies that have not been adapting to compete with those prices, because when things get automated, you know, it ultimately affects the bottom line.
Yeah, it's like, in my opinion, it's almost going to be, if you are a broker or a shipper with too big of a headcount in your department, that's a warning sign of big inefficiencies too. It's going to be a different world in terms of labor, in terms of the way we do these processes. It's going to change. We'll make it through. We're logisticians, right? We'll figure it all out.
I'll give you an example for customs, for example. Doing an entry is very, very labor intensive right now. You have someone going over the pack list invoice, manually keying in the data. But think in a futuristic world where we're having the customer's purchase order. We know exactly what's coming. Factories using that to book the cargo. If it underships, overships, we already know exactly. Now, doing a customs entry, we're almost there, but just a click of a button. We know the classifications for every item, every PO, and we're kind of getting to a point where we can eliminate any work involved in doing a customs entry. We have companies having teams of 60, 100, 150 employees just keying in customs entries. And a lot of that can be eliminated with technology. So this is just one small example within the customs arena, but there's so much more in all the other parts.
You're taking me back to my first few years in the business doing entries. And it was when we did a cradle to grave process. So you get the arrival notice, you get the airway bill or the seaway bill, and you get the invoice, and you'd have to rate the invoice, and you'd have to put the HDS codes on there. And if you took them from the factory, they're always wrong, because in China, they always send you the wrong HDS. They just make them up. And if you go to the shipper, you're like, well, look, we need the HDS codes. You're the broker. You figure out, like, no, by legal compliance, you have to get, it's such a pain, the back and forth. I would love to see some intelligence, especially someone who's handled so many entries. I would love to see some intelligence behind those. And I think that a lot of brokers would too. Maybe not the ones that lose their jobs with automation, but in general. Now, Chef, this has been a great talk. People want to learn more. They want to jump on board with you, especially when there's more room in the boat as you build things out. Where do I send them to?
Well, you can send them to shiffle.com. We have our contact information over there. Hello@shiffle.com. That's an email address, the general inbox. And we'd be happy to collaborate and talk to people.
Love it, man. Love it. Well, enjoy your time in New York. I'm glad you're back from the Caribbean. We got to talk. For those of you out there, let's tear down these virtual walls. Come out to F3 right here in Chattanooga. It's the Festival of Freight, F3, November 8th to 10th. Go to live.freightwaves.com. Go get your ticket. I hear that if you use promo code WTT, you'll save yourself $200 as well. Maybe you can use it to go to, not Taco Mac. Don't go to Taco Mac. But any one of these great places out here, go to Community Pie. That's great pizza, by the way. And, you know, I say it as an East Coaster, so I'm vouching for it. You want this episode, look up FreightWaves Insiders wherever you get your podcast, or look up FreightCast to get every single FreightWaves podcast all on one feed. You want to check out my other show, What the Truck? You can look that up as well. That airs live Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays at noon Eastern time. You can find me on Twitter at Timothy Dooner. That's D-O-O-N-E-R. You want to be a guest on the show? You got a great story, brand journey, that kind of thing. tdooner@freightwaves.com. Again, D-O-O-N-E-R. And if you want to watch this, it's on video as well. Download FreightWaves TV app wherever you get your apps from. Watch on your 4K TV. Sure, we look beautiful. Thanks again, Shabzy. And thank you, listeners. Take care.
Thank you, dear. All the best.
Take care and God bless. Take care. We'll catch up with you next week.